important now, not just in Britain, but in the United States, in Europe and elsewhere, to set up organizations and groups which educate, inform people about what is actually going on in Iraq under the occupation today. Which is why the contributions we've had from Haifa and from our friend here are extremely important, because it's this lack of information. Some of the things you've heard tonight already are not published in the national press. And a campaign is required precisely to counter official information or, in the best of cases, to supplement. And it's this lack of education that has been a problem. Because calling Blair a liar is fine. We all agree on that. No one doubts it. Most of his own party believes it. Half of British intelligence believes it. That's not a problem. But we've got to move a bit beyond that now. I think we've convinced everyone that Blair's a liar. We've now convinced people that this occupation is wrong, immoral, unjustified, and wage a campaign in solidarity with the people of Iraq who are resisting it in different ways, and not end the campaign till the last foreign soldier has been withdrawn from Iraq. That is what we are. Just imagine for a moment that there had been no resistance. Just think about it. Reflect on it. If there had been no resistance in Iraq after the fall of Baghdad, the triumphalism, the displays we would have seen in Washington, the posturing by these warmongers saying, "We won, look, we weren't resisted. Look, the people of Iraq accepted the occupation." Well, some of us warned them that this wasn't the case. That however much people despised Saddam Hussein and his regime, they would not accept a foreign occupation of their country. And no attempt to justify it would succeed with the people who really matter. The people of Iraq. It doesn't matter whether people here believe. We try and tell them that they shouldn't. But the key to the situation, as far as the occupation is concerned, are the people of Iraq. And after having had years of suffering from sanctions, after having years of medical problems because of the depleted uranium that was used during the first Gulf War, they've now had another war which is wrecking the infrastructure of that country. And instead of depleted uranium, or in addition to it, we now have depleted sovereignty. Because that is what this occupation has produced. In fact, it isn't any sovereignty at all. Who are going to be the two key people running Iraq for the next year, till the resistance manages to score bigger and bigger hits? The two key people are going to be, and in that order, John Negroponte, the new ambassador of the United States to Iraq, extremely experienced in organizing killing squads and death squads in Central America during the Reagan years, one of the key people involved in backing the Contras, who killed uncounted number of civilians in Nicaragua to bring down that regime. And they appointed Negroponte after a great deal of thought. They didn't just appoint him, they needed a killer. And who will be working under him is Eyad Alawi. Now, who is this guy? It's not just that he worked with MI6. It's not just that he was the genius who told Blair that Britain and British soldiers would be hit within 45 minutes. That we know, he was. It was misinformation. And Blair probably asked for it. But he was much more. From 1992 onwards, this guy was the agent of the Central Intelligence Agency of the United States. One of the things he had to carry out was terrorist raids in Baghdad, which left the regime undamaged, but which actually killed civilians, including children going in a school bus. That was an action they carried out after the Gulf War to try and destabilize the regime. So we now have a situation when a known terrorist acting on behalf of a foreign intelligence agency is the Prime Minister of Iraq. That's the reality. And these two guys are not going to be calm. They are rebuilding the security apparatus, using in many cases the same old Ba'athist torturers. They are rebuilding it for a purpose, because they will go on an offensive within the next 6 months to try and destroy any vestige of the resistance. And it's interesting that this occupation, like previous colonizations of that land, again are relying on tiny elites, as empires tend to do. The British did it, even the Ottomans did it before them, not in the same way, and now the United States are basically doing it. So, what has been the victories of the resistance? A, that it exists. That is in itself a big victory in a world which had forgotten what a resistance struggle would be like. And sometimes when I travel in Europe, I get very angry when people say, oh yeah, but the resistance isn't doing this, it should be a nicer resistance. I said, a resistance is created in the conditions that are determined by the occupation. If the occupation is ugly, do not accept the resistance to be beautiful. The only beautiful resistance movements you get are in Hollywood movies or Italian comedies. No resistance movement is pretty. Why? Because they use violence. That is never nice. And sometimes innocents are killed. It was thus in Algeria when they fought the French. It was the same in Vietnam when they tried to kick out the United States. It's the same in Iraq. But the choice is not to carry out a resistance in a beautiful way. The choice is either to resist or not to resist. And these people who have been carrying out this resistance have made the occupation show its colors very quickly. It's a colonial occupation. It's a colonial occupation in the way they deal with Iraqis. It's a colonial occupation that the total contempt they have for the citizens of Iraq, that they refuse to even count the number of Iraqis they've killed themselves. We don't have the statistics. We never had the statistics of the Native Americans we wiped out when we first formed our country. The British didn't need statistics of the number of Africans or Bengalis who died of starvation during the British Empire. No, we don't need statistics. And they're not keeping statistics in Iraq. Mercifully, there are groups and organizations which are keeping statistics. So we know how many thousands of Iraqis died during the sanctions. We know how many thousands of Iraqis are dying now. It's a rough figure. But they are in their thousands, in their several thousands. That's what's going on in Iraq today, in addition to the privatization and the corporate plans. But here we have to say that the resistance has been very effective. It has not simply targeted the colonial occupying soldiers. They've done that. They have also targeted people working for the giant corporations. And that is very intelligent indeed. Because these people are just as pernicious as those who are occupying the country with violence. They have occupied it so that the corporations can come in. It's two legs of the same neoliberal monster known as the Washington Consensus. And so to target one and not the other would be a mistake. And they are making Iraq ungovernable by these people, and many companies have withdrawn. Not the big ones who are guarded by the United States or private mercenary, but many small ones who thought there were easy pickings to be had with a country occupied, are retreating. They don't know what to do. And, of course, every single day now, since the fall of Baghdad, they've been targeting occupation soldiers. And on that, they also have been effective. Look, it constantly amazes me that people in the West now have lost their memories. They suffer from historical amnesia. They've forgotten that when a country is occupied, people don't like it. They don't like being occupied, they resist. Now, the Iraqi resistance has begun, and it almost telescoped everything far sooner than when the Germans occupied France. It took 2 years for the resistance to develop in France, and half the population supported that threatened occupation. Not the case in Iraq. It took longer for the resistance to begin in Scandinavia, in Holland, where the Germans had occupied it. But not the case in Iraq. In Iraq, the resistance began the day after the fall of Baghdad. Why? Because the Iraqi people, unlike the citizens of the West, have a memory. They have a consciousness. They were occupied before by the British Empire. And grandfathers and great-grandfathers who participated in the insurrections and rebellions against the British passed this on. Some are still alive. It's a young country. So there had to be a resistance. Now, the character of this resistance till now has been twofold. One, decentralized organization, independent groups operating in different parts of the country, armed struggle groups, without any overall national organization, which is rare, actually. It's virtually unprecedented in the history of resistance movements after a limited period of time. The second resistance, which has begun, is the resistance in the towns, led largely by the religious groups. Now, people say, why the religious groups? The reason that because of the religious groups is many of the secular groups, not all, but many of the secular groups are collaborating with the occupation. If you want to ask, where is the left in Iraq, apart from small groups of activists and others who are doing decent things, and the whole groups of very, very powerful intellectuals, the bulk of the traditional party of the Iraqi left, the Iraqi Communist Party, is collaborating with the Americans. And not just collaborating politically, some of the people who push in favor of the hardest privatizations within the old governing council were the Iraqi Communists. Because they lost it. They're no longer communists. Much, much better to keep the same initials but change your name. The Iraqi Capitalist Party. That's what we want for the Iraqi Collaborative Party. We can still keep the same name. You don't have to change the initials, so you don't need to print new notepaper. And in this situation, what is going to happen in Iraq over the next 6 months will determine the future of this occupation. The two key demands, which probably unify 90% of the population, 90%, 80% if you don't want to be so generous, are the following. One, the withdrawal of all occupying armies from our country, and the second, Iraqi control of Iraqi oil. I think if a vote was taken in Iraq today about do you want the oil industry of Iraq, the wealth of Iraq to be privatized, you would have a massive majority against it. The Americans know this. They know this perfectly well, so they're proceeding carefully on this front. And if you ask, do you want American troops to withdraw, I think a majority would be strongly in favor. And then following that, once these are achieved, elections to a constituent assembly so that the Iraqi people themselves can determine their own future. And that's the time when the big debates will have to take place with the religious groups. Because at the moment they are fighting. Or some of them are, some are collaborating. One shouldn't forget that. It's not the case that all the religious groups are in the resistance or fighting. Some are resisting passively, some are resisting, others are collaborating as well. But the largest groups of the within the South and in Baghdad of the religious parties have announced and said very clearly, we want the Americans out of our country. It was Sistani who called for a constituent assembly, a demand straight from the annals of the French Revolution. An elected constituent assembly, elected on the basis of one person, one vote, every Iraqi will vote to elect, and this constituent assembly will determine the future of Iraq. Good, there is a very make good basis on which to develop a constitution, and that's the constitution which was written after the 1958 revolution in Iran, which guarantees the rights of women, which guarantees other basic human rights, a constitution which unfortunately was not implemented even by its founders, but it provides a very good basis for moving forward. With the occupation, you cannot have democracy, because the function of the occupation is to privatize Iran, and that is what they are proceeding to do. As our comrade here pointed out, they have passed laws, the Iraqi Governing Council, which make it impossible for even this second wave puppet regime to change anything. The only people who will have the right to change will be the people of Iraq once they are free of their oppressors. And I think this is the message we have to take home. You know, if you're in someone else's country and you brutalize them, they will resist by every means possible, violent and non-violent, to drive you out. And the sooner they succeed, the better, because it will stop these adventures. But these adventures can only be stopped if there's a resistance. Look what happened when the Americans, this time not with Blair, because he didn't have enough troops, probably, but the French, toppled the elected regime of Aristide in Haiti. Not a whimper from anyone. In France, the left was completely paralyzed. Not a whimper. Why? Because there was no resistance, because he agreed to go. They warned him he'd be killed if he didn't, so I don't blame him for leaving. But he left, and now the New York Times writes, 2 months after Aristide was toppled, the New York Times writes, daily conditions for the bulk of patients are now worse off than they were under Aristide. Thank you very much. And they use the same mechanisms to topple regimes. They haven't changed. So the only lesson they learned from Iraq is be careful of which countries you occupy and change regimes in. If there is a danger of resistance, which there would be if they tried to take Syria or Iran without any doubt, there would be a similar sort of resistance, then don't do it. So that's the we are now in a very critical situation, which is why solidarity is needed more than ever before. Because they will pretend, you'll see with this wretched United Nations backing the occupation now, backing this corrupt regime which they've imposed on Iraq, you'll see an attempt to say, okay, let's forget our disagreements on the war, what happened may have been right, may not have been right. Today you have this junior foreign office minister, Michael O'Brien, worried no one's going to vote New Labour, saying, I would like to remind people that lots of Labour MPs after all voted against the war, so don't punish New Labour. He actually said that. This is the foreign office minister trying to sort of capture the anti-war movement for New Labour by saying, the answer is, why didn't you vote against the war in Saudi, and why didn't you resign from the Foreign Office? Now, the movement always, I remember actually, it's very touching to be in this hall, because it was in this hall in 1966. Some white heads will remember, I can't see any familiar faces from that period, but it was in this hall in 1966 that we decided to launch the Vietnam Solidarity Campaign, and the message was read out. And I remember from this platform speaking in that year, and a message was read out from Bertrand Russell and Jean-Paul Sartre, who had decided to set up an international war crimes tribunal to try the United States for war crimes in Vietnam. Because that's the question I want to come to now, the question of torture. Look, that it's horrible goes without saying. But I want to ask you this. Why surprise? I was in Cairo and Beirut when these stories came up. I didn't meet a single person of any political persuasion who was surprised. They weren't surprised, because their memories are still there. Their memory banks are still full. They knew what had happened in Aden, what the British did in Aden, what the British did in Dhofar. They knew that. They knew what had been done in Algeria. They knew what had been done in Vietnam. The American officers used to wear necklaces made from the ears of captured Viet Cong prisoners to show how tough they were. So let's not forget that atrocities and torture are part and parcel of every colonial occupation. And let's not forget that the same tortures which were carried out in Abu Ghraib prison are being carried out in many lesser prisons and in private rooms have been inflicted on the Palestinian people now for the last 20 years. The same humiliation. The same debased behavior which they do to try and destroy people, destroy their inner calmness. They don't succeed, but they try and do it because they are foolish. They think that in this way they can break people, and exactly the opposite happens. So, apart from building a sustained, carefully thought out solidarity movement with the Iraqi resistance, of which I see this as being the first important step, because these things don't happen overnight, they have to be worked for. The second thing we have to try and do is to punish the warmongers in all the countries where war was made. I was in Madrid, in Barcelona, the week Zapatero took power. And I can't even begin to describe to you the joyous mood on the streets of Madrid and Barcelona. People were proud to be Spanish, and they had every right to be. They had just kicked out a government which had taken them to war when 90% of Spaniards were against the war. So this notion that the terrorists did it, it's not true. The terrorists may have jogged the memory banks, but everyone virtually in that country was against the war. And the happiness that they got rid of their close friend, Asna, from Spain. Now, what made it easier for them was that Asna was a conservative. Here, the conservatives and New Labour support the war. That makes it more difficult. But nonetheless, I think we have to think when the general election comes, the European and local elections, I'm afraid they're a bit of a joke in this country. So they're not very decisive, so it would be good if they were punished even in these. But the general election will be the big test. And I think we have to think creatively, build local alliances. I'm not in favor of voting against Labour MPs who voted against the war. If the line is to punish the warmongers, then you pick and choose all those who back the war from all the parties and do something in these regions. Campaign, at the very least, to show people these are the guys who took you to war. It's not impossible that Blair would lose his majority. It would be wonderful if he lost himself, if they lost the majority. I tell you, I would celebrate. Because how can these politicians carry on behaving in the way they do if they are never punished? And how long can people behave in a tribal way? Oh, we've always voted Labour, it doesn't matter. But it does matter when they make war. Blair has now fought more wars than Thatcher and Major put together. That's the reality. More blood has been shed under the watch of this Labour government than any preceding government over the last 30 years. And now when you think back on Wilson not sending troops to Vietnam despite heavy American pressure, just imagine what these guys would have done. He's an attack dog, ready to go, ready in waiting, and now he's feeling nervous, and people, New Labour people, are going around to each other saying, God, who thought the British would be so worked up about a foreign policy issue? It's not a foreign policy issue, stupid. It's a war where you're killing people, where your own people who you've sent there are being killed. It's not a joke which can be dealt with a party which, you know, consumerist credit card party. And they're losing supporters. And the way they can be punished is to build a totally open, non-sectarian response which calls for Blair to be punished and to see the ways of doing it. And we have have to construct alliances which we can't even think of. And there are lots of people out there ready to do it. And that was the mood of the demonstration of a million and a half in London. This was not a demonstration of the left. So big, big analytical mistake to imagine that. It was the first assembly, if you like, of a massive, large, broad coalition which was fed up with Blair and fed up with the government. And that is what should have been built on, in my opinion. In any case, it's not late. The general election, if they're planning it next year, we have to do something. We have got to make the occupation an issue. And in that, of course, what happens in Iraq is absolutely decisive. Because it's what's been happening in Iraq which has changed world politics. It's still people, resistance is possible. It has changed the attitudes of many people in the United States, where for the first time a majority is saying it was wrong to go to war. Because they see the images on their screens. And they don't like what they see. So what happens in Iraq is crucial, and that is why meetings like this, an attempt to set up a proper organization in different parts of the country, is crucial to educate and inform people so they can agitate against the political leaders who took them through.